Yep. So the point there, the potential is to have your estimated taxes reallocated to another year and then have those refunded by calling the IRS. Certainly possible. The other thing that we've experienced lately, though, is a lot of the IRS just issuing random refund checks without request. And even though we've asked them to credit them towards another tax year. So I fear, and look, I have a lot of sympathy for them, I'm formerly working there, right? There's a ton of work, not a lot of people to do it, and I fear that this is just sort of added on another layer of miscommunications that may happen in terms of random checks showing up when you didn't ask for them and checks that you asked for not showing up. But I don't know, have you seen that?
We have not experienced that. I've been hearing about that, but fortunately we have not experienced that. And talking about future estimated tax payments, you could, too, even instead of calling the IRS, too, you maybe you, instead of your next payment that you make, you're just going to reduce just it by the, you know, the overpayment. So we're going to look at all those scenarios, and whatever works best for us as a whole, we're going to kind of take those approaches. But just some options to think about. Or when we're talking about mending returns, going back, if you were just in an NOL situation, you could potentially just adjust your NOL on a current return or future return instead of actually going back and amending those returns. But for us, a lot of those, if we had any NOLs, we ended up paying some AMT tax because that was the last six-month period that we still had to deal with AMT tax. So we may still have to go back and amend some of those returns.
Yep. Question.
Oh, is this on?
Yes. Oh, gosh. Okay. I just wanted to mention that the IRS actually did release guidance this morning on how to claim refunds for this. It's on their website. Basically, you'll be filing an amended return for those years, and they've got like step-by-step process. You basically just mention that it's the repeal of 512A7 or whatever. Anyway, just wanted to give people a heads up so that they've made a very clear process of what steps you should be taking.
Yep, and that process is basically they just restated what the process is. There's nothing special about that process. But so Chairman Neal wrote them a letter, right, saying, "Hey, you need to help taxpayers out with this." And they basically said, "All right, here's your guidance." Okay, I do want to move on a little bit, but one thing I wanted to mention. So Ray, I think you said you're also facing penalties, right? So you had some. You underreported your UBI, right? Because this sprang up, and now there are going to be there are penalties. You'll
That's
request
correct.
That there be abated because the tax is gone, but who knows how that will work its way through the system.
Yeah, that's right. We're still dealing with some of that, cleaning up from that 630-18 year. By the time we filed the notice didn't come out until we actually had to file our extensions for that year, so we didn't get the advantage of taking that notice and learning some things from the notice. So, yes. We were assuming that there was going to be that value versus cost, that maybe they're going to say if it was no value, then there was no UBI, but they clarified that, and that's where we ended up not paying tax and for some of our other facilities. So, and one thing I think it goes back to Justin, what you said earlier. These are provisions that we're seeing as they kind of that tax erosion, and it's very likely that we could see something like this in the future. You know, when you talk about and look at a provision like this, a lot of times we'll manage activities, UBI activities. We won't allow them to do it. It's just not worth it, and you can keep UBI under control. This one here, you really didn't have that opportunity. It is what it is. You're going to pay UBI. From a system that has joint ventures, and this is one of those little technical requirements, but an unintended consequence of these types of rules, we participate in joint ventures where we control that partnership. It may be operating a hospital. We treat that as exempt revenue. Well, partnerships year end is determined basically on the year end of your partners. But when you have an exempt partner, you typically ignore the exempt partner unless there is UBI coming up from those partnerships. In this case here, all of a sudden, we had UBI coming up from all of our partnerships because of this parking. We started going down the road, do we have to now change all of our year ends for all of our partnerships? Because since we were a 630 filer and now we have UBI and go through those tests, technically we thought the answer was yes. So this was even going further to where we're about to have a large administrative nightmare or decision to make, are we going to go start changing our year end for all of our partnerships and having all these short period returns because of this UBI that was flowing up? So just keep that in mind. Those are things as you start going down all the ramifications of a provision like this. The good thing is it went away, and we don't have to worry about that now, but just something to think about.
Going forward. Right. So when are you going to change your calendar year of your organization to or your fiscal year to calendar year to, you know, match up with your partnerships?
It may be easier to do that.
One other wrinkle to the 512A7 repeal is at the state level. So many states also charge, also tax you on your unrelated business income. And the different states take different approaches to how they match up to federal tax code. Some of them have what's called rolling conformity, which is, you know, whatever the tax code is at the federal level, that's what the provisions are at the state level.